I'm Ellen Mary.
And I'm Michael Perry.
And he's a plant geek.
And she's a plant addict.
And this is the Plant-Based Podcast.
This is more than just a gardening podcast. We'll be exploring the world of plants from every possible angle. We'll be talking about plant-based diets, plant materials and fabrics, the well-being qualities of plants, and giving plenty of gardening tips and tricks.
So we'll be chatting worldwide to companies and individuals that are being creative with plants in new and exciting ways, from fabulous flower crowns to foliage-filled lounges,
botanical moisturizers to bamboo clothing.
It's all here.
And it's all made of plants.
This episode of the Plant-Based Podcast is brought to you by our friends at VeggiePod. Their integrated raised vegetable garden bed kit makes growing vegetables easy for everyone. With self-watering features and protective canopy, with VeggiePod, you'll be harvesting your own produce in no time. Available in three sizes to suit any garden. Visit veggiepod.co.uk and enter PBP10 for a special discount as a PBP subscriber.
We're here with Emma Mitchell, who you may recognise from Twitter and Instagram. On Instagram, she could be regarded as Insta-famous.
Yeah, I think
rubbish. You are.
Yeah, she's on there as Silver Pebble, and she has really become known for her beautiful flat lays. So this is flat lays when you take the picture from above. All different pieces of nature are laid out on that picture. But there's a more important message behind there, because she's really talking about her own experiences with mental health, how nature has helped her through the seasons as well. And we're going to talk about that synergy with online and offline and how nature has helped her. But actually, social media and being online has helped her to then help others as well. So we're here in Wickenwood in Suffolk. We've had a bit of a walk around as well, and you'll hear about that later in the episode. And we're basically going to talk to Emma and see how she began on Instagram and how she feels about well-being and mental health. And really, yeah, over to you, Emma. Introduce yourself.
Oh my goodness. All right.
That was quite an introduction.
Yeah.
It was. He's built it up a bit, hasn't he?
Emma of Instafame.
Oh, yeah. Christ.
It's probably the worst thing to be regarded as Instafamous, isn't it?
It's got its downsides, I think, in certain parts of the internet.
Tell us your story.
My story. Yeah. Well, I have been passionate about nature since I was really tiny. So I can remember making pretty arrangements of stuff I found on beaches or in woods when I was tiny. I mean, you know, 5, 6, 7. I've been doing it all my life, really, and I just thought it was something a little bit private and weird, arranging leaves and twigs and, you know, stuff that fell off birds. I just thought it was a sort of a bit odd.
And stuff that fell out of birds as well, maybe.
No, as long as it fell off and not
Michael,
out, yeah.
You know your own tricks best. Anyway, Do you make Insta pictures out of the bird poo, really?
No, not yet.
Okay.
It could be a new thing.
It's a new sector. Okay.
Anyway, focus.
Okay. And so I started to do that a little bit on my blog. My blog started in 2008, and it was a combination of craft, so making and using craft in particular to help if you were having a sort of a down, stressful day, distracting yourself and sort of calming yourself through yarn craft or drawing or whatever, but particularly influenced by nature and the seasons. So I would go out, see what's flowering in my garden or in the hedgerows near our cottage in Cambridgeshire. It's about 25 miles from here. And use those plant shapes or plant forms to make things in silver or do embroidery or drawings. And the aim of my blog primarily was to help my mental health, because obviously it's a very creative process to make a blog post and take photographs, but I was also trying to help others who perhaps, in particular in the winter, were having a tough time. And I was interested in how other people were using creativity and maybe contact with nature to survive dodgy days or you know, the sort of lull you can often get in the winter. And my background before that was that I was a scientist, so I was, I'm a molecular cell biologist by trade, originally.
Wow. So clever.
So
Ellen and I just sat here agog. We're like,
I know, I don't know what to say.
Sorry.
Carry on.
Basically, I know quite a lot about DNA and cells and how they work. Okay. And they're, it's like, you know, the machinery inside cells and how if you disrupt that, something, you know, something can happen to an embryo or whatever. Mm. Genetics and stuff, how you build a creature from a fertilised egg.
Okay.
That was the main part of my studies. But then after that, I went on and learned about patents and I went into the tech consultancy sector, running projects for, you know, food clients, companies or startups. And secretly, though, in the evening, that was quite a high-powered job, you know, long hours, quite a lot of responsibility. In the evening, I was sort of twiddling around with twigs and making jewellery semi-secretly. And that's what eventually evolved.
Why secretly?
Well, because I was, you know, I had a certain career path that I was on. And I didn't really... And actually, one of the reasons it was semi-secret was I was working for one of the Cambridge consultancy companies. And I was quite proud of the fact that I also made tiaras for brides and had little kind of collections of jewellery in... small galleries around East Anglia.
Okay.
And I talked about that on the first day of me being in that company. It was quite male dominated and it was and they completely extracted the anyway, yeah, they were mocking me.
Extracted the beep.
They did. They were mocking me about it. So I then thought, oh, I better not talk about that. Even though I was really proud of it and it was a tiny business, it was a fledgling business on the my sort of side gig really. I didn't really feel that they were kind of seeing that as something positive. Mm-hmm. So, kept it secret.
Well, of course, I often talk about the same when I was a kid, being ashamed of loving plants. You know, I think you've had similar experiences, Ellen.
Yeah, I wasn't. Yeah. I don't think I was ashamed. It just wasn't a thing. No one else done it, so I just didn't talk about it. I don't think I was necessarily even really hiding it.
No.
But it wasn't a thing, so, yeah, I just didn't discuss it. No one would have known. So I guess perhaps I was ashamed.
Yeah, you don't know what they would have said.
I don't, I wouldn't have known what they'd said, so, yeah.
Okay. And it was weird because I wasn't ashamed. So when I spoke about it, I was thinking, this is great. This is sort of entrepreneurial. It's transferable skill. You know, I'm selling my skills to brides, and that I was also going to be selling my consulting skills. But they thought that was laughable. So, and it sort of surprised me. It was
really frustrating, actually.
It is. But I mean, this was 2000. Uh-huh. So it's quite a while ago.
Okay.
And I think attitudes towards handmade things and, you know, small scale.
But maybe not in that environment. In that environment, it might still be similar.
It may be.
Perhaps.
I mean, it was very male dominated. Mm. A lot of kind of Oxbridge graduates in that environment. Anyway, so the blog was an escape from that, and it was also a way to. I had my eldest little girl was really poorly when she was small, so I was I gave up that career to become a small scale maker, a designer maker, a blogger, and an Etsy seller. So the blog was really important for me to try and build up a little bit of an audience for the things I was making.
Yeah.
And it was also a lifeline when, you know, my little girl was poorly or we were in the middle of winter and I, you know, I was in a tiny village, quite isolated. And that was an online community that was really positive.
Mm.
There were beautiful handmade socks, you know, there were gorgeous prints being made, drawings and... pottery, all kinds of gorgeous creative crafts. Mm. And that was a window onto a world that was really positive.
So you're obviously a very creative person.
Yeah.
And you used that creativity as your therapy.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realise, but I know now that I was sort of self-medicating against high levels of stress in the evenings. I'd get home and my husband Andy would hand me a sort of tray with all of my jewellery making stuff on it and a glass of wine and I'd put on Dawson's Creek.
Oh, I used to love Dawson's Creek.
So did I. It was amazing.
Oh, I did the same bit with Hollyoaks.
Did you? Yeah. Well, I watched that too. I was just really into the whole dynamic between Joey and Dawson and Pacey.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Pacey.
Oh, my God.
And it's just so delicate and such as, like, quite a gentle programme, wasn't it?
Was, it
as well?
It was. Yeah. There wasn't a great deal of angst going on.
Oh, I've got a spot. That's probably the worst angst there ever was.
It was a bit worse than that, but yeah. anyway, so that was... I realise now that was me self-soothing after a super, super stressful day in a really high-powered job. So I now tell people that it might help if they are having stressful times, that something creative, very simple. I mean, you could just draw... You know, you could draw a poo emoji if you wanted with a smiley face on it. Nobody has to see. Do you know what I mean?
You're just spending
10 minutes away from social media with a cup of tea, just doodling leaves or...
It's very mindful.
Very, yeah. And it really does... There's evidence to show that, you know, there are changes in our neurotransmitters and in our bodies when we do something creative. And so I now run workshops across the country, and... A really important part of those workshops, I'm obviously teaching a skill, either botanical illustration or casting plants in silver, but a really important part is to say that, you know, when you've gone away from this workshop, if you can incorporate a couple of sessions a week, two or three sessions a week of literally 10 minutes of either taking photographs of a few leaves in your garden or doing a small doodle, a really stylized doodle of some leaves and twigs and things, just for 10 minutes, it can really... be as beneficial as yoga or as beneficial as meditation, you know, like Headspace app is really popular. It can have the same effect.
Has it always been about nature?
It has, because I'm a biologist, and because I basically was passionate about this. I was really kind of enchanted by the shapes of leaves even when I was very small, and spent a lot of time next to my granddad's pond. And we lived in suburban Liverpool. It wasn't a wild place at all, but there was a, he was a plantsman. He taught me how to grow seeds and propagate various various houseplants. I think Streptocarpus. He taught me how to how to propagate. And I would spend loads of time in his greenhouse with him, and it was a time that I now look back on with, you know, great appreciation. And I miss him terribly. And he taught me so much about plants, in particular. And nature. And I used to find baby... We've just found a little tiny baby frog where we're sitting on these logs here.
I know, your eye for it. It's tiny and you saw it straight away.
I know, I think I do have a bit of an eye for details in nature in particular, but we saw this teeny frog, which will have been from last year. So it's about 2 centimetres long. Last year's baby. And it's exactly the kind of frog I used to find next to my granddad's pond. But I used to hold it and think, oh, it's a miniature frog. And it used to blow my mind I was about five or six. You know, just think, hold on, there's a big frog in there. This is a tiny one. How does that happen? What's going on? Is nature? How is this working? And so that, you know, and it was sort of inevitable. I'd become a biologist,
there's,
you know.
There's two points in what you were just saying there. And one is that we often say it within the podcast, but many people who we meet who are working in horticulture or being creative in horticulture have had a connection with nature from a very young age. Even if they went away from it and took another career, they've always come back to it. But that connection and that knowledge that they had that was given to them by maybe family members or schools or whatever it was at a very young age always comes back. It's always there within you, isn't it? Which is so important with children now.
I agree. And I think that exposure to nature, particularly actually for urban children or urban families, is so important because... first of all, it will, as you say, it'll lay down a passion and an interest in our environment, which, as we know, is under threat from so many different kind of human activities. But it was also maybe set the seed for their job. You know, maybe they'd go into, conservation or horticulture, as you say, or something creative influenced by nature, as I have. And I think that there's not just that... sort of setting the seed for the children now to help to protect our environment, because we know how important it is. The climate crises are in the news all the time at the moment. But also there's the mental health benefits, as you know, don't you, both of you, the mental health benefits of sitting where we are now. I mean, we're just...
Listen to the birds.
It's absolutely really wonderful. Forced us to slow down and enjoy the day and the detail.
We're not as manic as usual because we are relaxed. Just the other point within everything you were just saying is how, you know, you held that frog and you looked at it and thought, how does this happen?
Yeah.
Where is its place in nature?
Yeah.
And we've actually just recently been talking about that, haven't we, Michael? That the world is a big place. Everything is linked. We are a minor apart, but we're causing massive problems for a species. But we, you know, everything is linked in some way, and every leaf you look at has a place.
That's
you know, and a weed is part of this huge, big ecosystem, which is the world.
Mm, yeah.
You know, and it's massive when you think about it. It's almost uncomprehensible, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, even this little patch. I mean, we're sitting on some logs that have been felled to create a clearing in this beautiful wood in Suffolk. And even in front of us, I can see violet leaves, and I can see some tiny wild roses just there. I can see some brambles.
Yeah.
And earlier on, we saw sorrel, didn't we? Actually, had a taste of some sorrel.
So lemony.
Oh, it's so good. Oh, there's a orange tip
there's
again.
The orange tip. Oh, yeah.
But loads of bugle and various grasses and sedges. So it's immensely complex. Even this couple of square meters in front of us, as you say, but underneath, you know, there's the interconnected network of mycorrhizae that communicate, help trees to communicate
all of the roots
between one another.
Yeah.
So Emma, I want to ask, at what point did you realise that you were actually self-medicating? Were you aware of it,
no,
or do you now look back and realise what you're doing?
I look back, and it's only really in the past year or two, having become a writer, having to start to really think deeply about the benefits of both time spent creatively and in particular linking that to nature, maybe going and gathering materials and the combination of that. I realise now that I was self-medicating by the repetitive movements of my hands and my eyes when I was making these little garland necklaces and also the small drawings that I do. And I would yearn, you know, as in the office sort of 12-hour days, and it was really interesting but very stressful, and I'd yearn to get home and just use my hands to make things. Or and I was gardening even then. I was pretty young starting gardening. I was probably about 26 when I started gardening.
But I really applaud you for actually getting home from that high powered job and picking up pieces of nature and working with it, because a lot of us would be too tired at the end of that day and we wouldn't be able to switch our minds off from that high-powered job and interact with nature. But it's great that you were able to do that. You had that duality there, didn't you?
Well, I think that a fair bit of my job was linked with molecular biology and sort of maybe biotech in some way. So there is a link there. But I think there's a part of my brain that absolutely lights up like a Christmas tree when I'm among plants or I'm making, or ideally both. You know, when I run workshops where we cast things in silver, so I'd be perhaps picking a tiny sprig of these little wild rose leaves if there were enough of them, and we'd press them into silver clay and then basically take it through a sort of chemical process, and at the end you'd have this beautiful pendant with an incredibly detailed imprint of these leaves. That to me is utter heaven. So you've got the gathering first. I go out into the garden with every workshop, or I go into you take people in the hedgerow and we gather things, or in a herb garden, and we bring it home and press it into this incredible clay and we make something extremely beautiful. So we've got all kinds of things going on. You've got the effect of being among plants and trees. So that has about five different effects on our biochemistry. As you were saying, you felt slower and more calm. Having been in here now for about half an hour in this wood, we'll have had lower blood pressure and the pulse rate will have diminished. Seeing the green, when you're just gathering something to draw or to make with, just the green itself has an effect on our neurotransmitters.
So relaxing, isn't it?
Yeah, on our neurotransmitters.
And it's so easy not to do that, though, isn't it?
I find
that, at least, because I get so busy, and then rather than interacting with nature, I can be guilty of just lying on the sofa and watching Hollyoaks.
Or maybe just looking at a photo. Yeah. I mean, you can actually get those effects slightly less marked and slightly less strong if you look at photos of nature.
Okay.
And that can help when you're really poorly. But we've also got diminished stress hormone level from coming in this wood. And that's been shown by the Japanese research.
And they, of course, have one of the highest life expectancies in the world, don't they? And some of those reasons are they're very mindful and focused on one activity at a time. And actually, they're not so into the multitasking, whereas we promote multitasking. But actually, it's not that good for you. It's seen as a strength, isn't it? And their ability to appreciate and be outside of nature. Yeah. There's actually three orange tips here. One of those is an orange tip, all dancing around each other. And I feel completely distracted because they just look so beautiful.
Those are small
I don't know
whites.
What that one is. That's not a small white.
Not quite sure what
those species. Two are small whites, and the one that went off down there was the orange tip, which keeps flying fluttering by us.
I can see a ladybird.
Can didn't you?
Over there on the leaf.
Oh,
no, that's a real lovely memory of childhood as well, isn't it? That,
is it a ladybird or a ladybug?
Oh, I'm not sure. Ladybird, but that takes me back to my grandma's Aubretia beds as well.
Oh, really?
I love how plants are linked to memories and the fragrance of plants as well. The feel of them.
Oh, Aubretia is such got a gorgeous scent. Mm. So slightly peppery, but very heady.
Such a vivid colour as well.
Such a
it's like a highlighter pen has been used on your rockery.
Amazing purples, aren't they?
I do spend quite a lot of time outside with nature. My way to relax is to go outside with nature, and I love walking around our local woodlands and parks and gardens, and I'm partial to hugging a tree, which I'm going to probably do very soon.
I'm partial to eating the hedgerow. I walk with friends, I'm always like pointing out the things you can forage for, or eating the hawthorn leaves and stuff like that. They just think you're crazy, though.
Well, that's being with nature and appreciating it as well, isn't it?
Well, you actually get and there's an ancient pathway in our minds, in our brains, that links to foraging, you know, our ancestors, and how important that was to actually survival. So when we picked that bit of sorrel earlier, I, or maybe you as well, would have had a bit of burst of dopamine. It's called the harvest high. I don't know if you've heard of it. So when you gather something from either your garden, perhaps you've grown tomatoes, or you come across an amazing area with loads of blackberries and you pick them, that ancient hunter-gatherer pathway in our brains triggers. Wow. And dopamine makes you feel really elated. It's almost like a sort of, it's a real natural high. And so going out and foraging, now not necessarily for things to eat, so maybe you could go and find, you know, a really beautiful leaf from a seasonal plant, or a very, very common wild flower you could bring about, or a snail shell, you still get that little burst of dopamine. So you can use that now. So all of these effects that nature has on us, this is what I've written about in The Wild Remedy, we can now use that to help to stem or alleviate the epidemic of mental illness.
Incredible.
Because those pathways are still there. Our connection with nature is still very strong, except that obviously most of us don't necessarily immerse ourselves in a woodland area every day.
I always find the term connect with nature or reconnect with nature quite a funny term, because we are nature. So I don't see it as connecting or reconnecting. I just see it as remembering it. We just need to remember we are actually nature.
That's a really good way of thinking about it.
So right.
But I think if you were an urban dweller and perhaps lived far a bit of away from any green space, that connection can be severed. And I think you're right, and that it might be a bit more challenging for that person to remember. And I'm hoping that my book can help more people
to remember.
Because as human beings, we evolved in this kind of atmosphere, in this kind of environment. This was our high street. This was also our home.
And our supermarket.
Well, exactly.
To some degree.
Yeah. Totally. Our supermarket. I mean, all of the things we needed to for medicine, but also for food, for adding flavour to our... But also, you know, all of these kind of hazel whips and hazel here, we'd have been using that to make our homes, but also to keep in our livestock, or you could use it to make baskets. So everything we needed was outside. So when we actually go and spend time, those ancient pathways can be reawakened, and they're still there.
I love it. And it's completely, I mean, you know, everything I do is about well-being and how plants are good for our well-being, and how being together, I don't even like to say connecting, but just being together is so important for mental health and physical as well.
Absolutely.
It's been absolutely fascinating. Thank you. So in the second part, we're going to talk about your book.
Oh, okay.
Which is fantastic. And also flat lay and how you do that exactly. Give us some tips.
Yeah, and what's it like to be Insta famous? Do you get recognised in Tesco Express, for example?
Never. I can make that clear right now. Never.
I love this woman. Oh, my gosh.
Me too.
Yeah.
She's very honest.
Yeah.
But she's great fun as well.
Yeah.
So intelligent.
Yeah, exactly. And she's got such presence and from at times to times, oh, gosh, sorry, from time to time, she's got this kind of almost like slightly dippiness to her, which then I can relate to because...
Well, because you're dippy.
Yeah, I mean, I can be a bit clumsy from time to time, or kind of like, you know, you're just,
Yeah, just that kind of lovely Englishness, I guess, that we have, that kind of real honesty.
You know, you often say when you very first meet someone, you know if you're going to get on with them or not. I felt that. As soon as I met her, I thought, oh, yeah, you are great.
When she bought me chocolate mousse
for lunch.
But no, her knowledge is great. Kind of obviously her self-medicating is extremely interesting as well.
Yeah.
And, of course, how she has made kind of a flat-lay art form out of this as well. I was so excited to meet her for the first time because I'd followed her for like a couple of years, I think, and she gets a hell of a lot of likes on Instagram too. And I went to her book launch in Cambridge. Yeah, and it was a real honour to meet her, and we had some little snacks afterwards.
That's nice.
So I'm so happy that you've met her today as well, and you feel the same about her.
Completely.
As well.
I followed her on Instagram as well, like you said, and other social media. But I got her recent book, The Wild Remedy, which was really good. It's a nice seasonal approach to how nature can help your well-being. So it was really good, really interesting. So yeah, sometimes when you, I don't know, read a book or you follow someone on socials, you don't. When you meet them, it's almost underwhelming in a way, but not with her. It was fab. Okay. Do you know what I mean? It was just brilliant. Yeah. She was exactly lovely and great fun. And I just, really great person. And I love how she talks very openly about her mental health in order to help others whilst being cathartic, I'm sure, for herself as well. But putting yourself out there when you've got...
Definitely.
Those kind of issues is a big deal.
Yeah, it really is. And to be so candid about it. But I guess, you get a lot of comfort from knowing that helps other people because not everybody would necessarily be able to talk about it in that way. Right. And also so coherently as well.
Yeah.
She's kind of able to kind of bring herself out of herself and look down on it, which can't be easy to do that all the time, but she's able to do that enough that she can help others, which is amazing. And I love, we start to chat to her more about what's behind everything in the second half, but then right at the end of the second half, we actually go on a bit of a walk with her in the forest, don't we? Which is incredible. Brilliant.
Her eye for detail.
Frog. She noticed a frog.
It was teeny tiny little frog, but she saw it out the corner of her eye. Oh. So, and we said, how did you see that? And she said, well, I'm a naturalist, so I just spot things.
And all the flowers. It was so nice to spot all the little flowers.
And she seemed very at ease and very happy in her environment. And I think that mental health is being discussed more now. I mean, obviously, there's a lot more work to be done, but I think social media has helped that. People are coming out on social media and saying, look, that this is something that has affected me, and then finding a really big support community, and finding groups of people and like-minded people out there helping each other. So that in itself is good for well-being, isn't it? That's when social media really comes into its own, I think. A lot of people diss it, don't they?
Yeah, I think they work in perfect synergy, to be honest. I think, of course, people can get a little bit over-enthusiastic with social media, use it too much. But actually, Emma's message has been passed out there through social media. So let's be careful not to knock it too much, because it's actually helped a lot of people.
So we've now moved into the garden at Wickham Vineyards, and we've walked through what's really like a magical garden around like a Tudor house. I think it's maybe Tudor, but
we've been plant geeking out.
Yeah,
like
we
crazy.
Have, and Michael's giddy with everything that he's seen. But it is actually beautiful, and we've now walked into the kitchen garden, which is where we've taken our pew for the second part of the podcast. And in the first part, Emma told us all about her love for nature and where that stemmed from and how it's helped her mental health.
Yeah.
And where the roots lie, in fact, where it's come from.
Oh.
Did you like it?
Oh, excuse the pun.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank
pun
you.
There.
And so we're going to talk about your book and also so listeners can get some tips on flat lie, which is what you, flat lie, lying, lie, flat lining, not that.
That's flat when you're not lay. Well.
We'll just let flat her roll lay. On that for a minute.
Yeah, just carry on. About flat lay as well. So tell us about the book. I mean, I know the book out at the moment is your second book.
That's right.
Let's go back to the first, if you like, and tell us how this all started.
Oh, what, the whole writing books thing?
Yeah. In a super quick synopsis.
Oh, okay. I'm sometimes not very good at that.
We can signpost you, darling.
Yeah. You know, with Hurry Up.
Not getting very far, are we? So I was getting a lovely response on my blog to what I was writing, and particularly the project that I ran several winters in a row called Making Winter. And it was just really sort of making your winter lovely, particularly if you'd struggled with the lower light levels and the sort of tricky weather. And I encourage people to share the ways in which they survive the winter creatively or through contact with nature, and that became really popular. Thousands of people were sharing what they were getting up to. Beautiful knitting and crochet, lots of cozy pictures of lovely candles. And in a way, this was way before the hygge trend.
Okay,
you know,
yeah.
The Danish word for kind of coziness and companionship.
Candles and throws and feet up.
It was way before that. So this was back in sort of 2008, 2009. And it was a British version in a way. Our winters aren't quite so dark and mm-hmm. long, but there was definite gems of coziness and real comfort there, but particularly with an emphasis on craft.
Okay.
And so I just thought, well, I wonder if this could be made into a book, and I had no idea how to do that. And long story short, my friend Helen Walmsley Johnson, who wrote a column for The Guardian, introduced me to her agent. And her name's Juliet.
There is a
very loud peacock in this garden, which is very beautiful, but you will probably hear it every now and again.
Yeah, the peacocks are sort of showing off their fancy tails. Juliet liked...
That's Michael.
I think we've got a new guest for the podcast here.
Did you have too many alliums earlier? Anyway, Juliet liked my idea for a book about... a sort of survival guide, a creative survival guide to the winter months in Britain and also in the US and Europe. And that's what happened. So Making Winter was published in October 2017. And it's done well. I mean, it's been endorsed by Robert McFarlane, one of our best nature writers. So because in the book, I also talk about connection with nature. That's very, very important. Getting outside, going for a walk, letting light into your eye, and often gathering materials to make really simple hedgerow or woodland wreaths, pressing leaves into silver clay, or doing a little bit of drawing. Or there's also a project about making nature collections and sort of keeping a nature diary.
So it's still all about that nature helping our well-being.
Yeah.
And then so you've released a second book very recently, haven't you, called That's The Wild right. Remedy.
That's right. So that is a nature diary of mine. So it's started to rain again, hasn't it?
It has started to rain. Have you got a brolly?
I have, but I can cover up
the thing. I'll hold the phone. Don't worry about that.
And the peacock's now just a foot away.
It's right behind us.
Wow. That is loud, isn't it?
He is very loud. So The Wild Remedy is a seasonal diary, isn't it?
It is. It's basically, it's a diary of my mental health and how getting out into nature impacts on that relatively quickly, but how I keep going outside and going for walks, especially on days when I'm feeling really low or really exhausted. And I became, and while I was writing the book, the book starts in October, I became extremely poorly in the March and April, and it's how nature was very crucial in helping me to recover. So obviously I went to the NHS and they were incredible, and so I I rely on antidepressants and talking cures as well, but day to day when I have perhaps a dip and my mood drops, contact with nature is absolutely essential
to you.
Totally.
I have a question that's, if you are having a real bad day, and I know people who just can't get out of bed.
Yep, I've been there.
And if somebody says to them, you know, oh, come on, let's get you outside, they can't get up and get outside.
I know, it's really tricky. Mm.
How do you help somebody to make that leap, if you like? Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Decide to help themselves.
And that is super hard. And I've been, have had days like that, many hundreds of them. And what I've done really is to try and make as diverse a garden as I can in terms of sort of attracting wildlife to it.
Mm.
But also I'm growing things that are simple to grow in my garden outside my back door. And you don't... God!
It's very noisy.
Do you attract these to your garden?
That's right. Peacocks are, you know, not necessary for... The maximal effects. Yeah, in fact, they're slightly stressful. I, you know, easy to grow things. You can grow things in pots on a balcony or on a windowsill as well. You will still get the benefits of being close to plants. And so what I mentioned earlier, when we were in the wood, the effects on our bodies are very rapid, within 10 to 15 minutes. Sometimes some of the studies have shown fewer minutes. We get pulse rate dropped and our mood is lifted and we feel less anxious if we're among plants. So I would really, really recommend growing, I don't know, things that grow quickly like marigolds and herbs, things that are perhaps are going to get, you can bring flowers into the house. So my friend Georgie Newbury, she runs brilliant workshops on how to grow a cutting patch, you know, so flowers that you can bring into the house. But I'd also recommend growing things to attract wildlife, because if you see a bee and then you go and look in your reference book or on that online and you recognise that it's, I don't know, we've just seen an early bumblebee here, haven't we? And we also saw, I think, a white-tailed bumblebee. You think, oh, wow, that's a little snippet of wildlife, a little scrap of wildlife on my own patch. And then you think, oh, maybe I can try and attract some different kinds of bees. And then it grows, and then you grow perhaps more flowers for pollinators. And then you've got there is... You don't have to go very far. You can go outside in your pyjamas. You know, your neighbours aren't necessarily going to see you. Yeah. You can stay in your pyjamas, put your snuggly jumper on, and then just go and peep at your own bees or peep at your own flowers.
And it gives you, I think, a sense of hope. So if you've planted something that you know is specifically to attract bees or butterflies or any kind of wildlife, even perhaps on a dark day, you do want to know if it's worked, if there's something there. So it kind of gives you that hope where maybe that's the draw, you know, to say, okay, I am going to get up, even if it's only for 5 minutes, I'm just going to go and check.
Well, I'll tell you what has been keeping me going. And I've not been feeling great the last few weeks, just the various sort of super levels of stress, really high stress levels at the moment. I have been feeding the birds every morning, and I've been making myself do it like I'd make myself do my teeth, brush my teeth, right? Oh. And I've done it because I know that if I get myself out in that garden and I'll put out some seed, so I use sunflower hearts and peanuts, and I've got mealworms, which are a bit more expensive, but they're worth it. You put them out.
Birds and robins love the mealworms,
totally.
Don't
but
they?
Also we get jays and jackdaws.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
Okay. Right.
So we've got ground feeders and sort of hanging feeders. There's evidence from research from the University of Exeter that shows that if you're looking out of a window and about a third of it is covered in foliage, your mental health is improved and you can measure it. But if there are birds in that foliage, your mental health improves further. Oh. So my advice is this. If you feel like poo, you feel absolutely rotten.
Like the poo emoji.
Like properly, but we're not even with a smiley face. A poo that's in bed with a sad face. Feed your birds, okay?
Wow.
Even on a balcony. And I can recommend that because I know that watching house sparrows coming, watching starlings, seeing them sort of strut about, those funny little struts they do.
I love the starlings.
Absolutely funny. And then you also get the sort of interactions and hierarchy. So you'll get a blackbird who's trying to chase everyone off. That gives you such a lift. And it again, you're right, it's hope and it's continuity. And then you want to see what happens the next day. And then you think, hold on, are they going in that hedge? Oh, hold on, I think there might be a nest there.
Yeah.
And that then you think, if I feed them, their babies are going to survive more readily.
I think it's that if I don't feed them, they're relying on, you know, they're waiting for me to feed them. Now, if I don't get up and I don't feed them, then I feel like perhaps I'm not doing something good for them.
But also,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's literally, I mean, we've got a little gaggle of house sparrows. House sparrows and starlings are seriously threatened. Their numbers have been slashed by human activity in the last 50 years. So the ones in our garden, I want them to survive.
Yeah.
And when you put out peanuts and mealworms and sunflower seeds, you are literally having a direct impact on some of the birds in the Britain who mm-hmm. that are really struggling.
Yeah.
And so you're doing something great, and that takes you out of yourself.
And yeah, the distraction element as well is great.
You've got the distraction, you've got the boost to your mental health by simply watching them, but it also means that you have to go out among your plants.
Mm. Yeah.
And forcing I probably wouldn't necessarily
brilliant.
Do that anyway. But so I go out there, I feed the birds, and then I start just peering at the little bees that are coming onto my honeyworts and serents. I go and say,
right behind me.
Really?
Good morning.
Hiya.
He's so noisy.
So I think it would be great if we could talk about flat lay now as well, because it's something you're really well known for. Visually, so beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
But the benefits of what you're doing for yourself while you're doing flat lay are massive, aren't they?
They are, so yeah.
It's, where did this come from and what's
I don't
all about?
Know. I've been doing it since I was seriously very little. I've got a memory of sitting on a beach in Pembrokeshire, so in sort of West Wales, when I was about 7 or 8, and arranging little things I'd found, like a tiny shell, a little bit of dried seaweed, maybe a tiny twig, a little crab claw, and I'd make them into little arrangements. And I do it now. So I'm now 47. So 40 years later, I'm still doing the same thing. My brain has an urge to do it. And I don't quite... And it's to do with gradation of colour, and it's to do with shapes, and it's to do with space between them. And there's a weird part of my brain that gets really happy.
Okay.
It's, I get a joy from doing it. But I now realise, having heard and read comments from people both on Twitter and Instagram, that looking at the photos that I make makes other people feel good too. So
yeah.
I get a serious, for me it's like meditation, it's like a sort of brain yoga with stuff that fell off trees or birds' bums or, you know.
So
things.
You're basically collecting things from nature.
That's right.
And you're placing them. Oh yeah, we have a helicopter now.
That's amazing. That's a shoe.
It's very noisy.
The countryside, but
let's wave.
Hiya.
Hi.
That's beautiful.
So that's amazing.
Massive
actually.
Army helicopter.
So you know, you're collecting things from nature, from the garden, out on woodland walks, wherever else, and then you're placing them onto paper.
Paper, linen, fabric, sometimes a scarf, sometimes my jumper.
And then you label them
bit
as well,
of,
don't
bit
you?
Bit of wood. Sometimes, oh, yeah, I do.
I like it when you do
I like
that.
It when they're labelled.
Do you?
Yeah.
Hold on. Just putting an
we now
umbrella.
Have an umbrella.
Yeah, high tech. I do like to label them because that connects me to sort of collections that I saw in houses a bit like this one.
Okay.
Old stately homes and National Trust properties. My mum used to drag us around loads of them. Mm. And the bits that I liked were the kitchens, because I loved the coppery pans and things like that. And I loved the bits where there'd be some old geezer from the 19th century, and he'd gone on the world tour and he collected a load of stuff like fossils and rocks and unusual plant seeds and stuff, and he'd label them all and they'd be in a cabinet. Those were the bits that I liked.
Really
I wasn't
cool.
interested in fancy chairs and curtains, do you know what I mean?
And that also helps other people learn as well, doesn't
yeah.
it? Like
well, yeah.
on Instagram, for example, people are then learning what these everyday flowers
yeah,
are.
So you are working with nature to make you feel better.
Yes.
So for your well-being. But then you're also putting it out there in your book and on your social media profiles, which are massive. And so you're using social media to spread the word, aren't you?
I am, but one of those peacocks really need to put a sock in it. They're a little bit...
But Emma, everything you said about nature.
Yeah, well, yeah, they need
peacocks
just need to
are a different thing,
dial it
right?
down a tiny bit. Sometimes if I'm having an absolutely rotten day, I've gotten to this new routine where I definitely feed the birds every day, which is brilliant, and I know it's helping the house sparrow babies. But I also will go and get a tiny seasonal collection from the garden or from the wood behind our house. You can hear the rain down.
Yeah.
And when I post a picture like that, people say,
it makes them feel soothed. And so that links to the evidence that if humans look at something beautiful, now it might be that little patch of thrift that's growing over there, or it might be those beautiful irises, or it might be my photograph that I've spent an hour or so arranging, you know, all of the little sprigs of forget-me-nots. You can get a burst of dopamine by looking at my photos. Mm. Now, we haven't done those experiments, but I know, research shows that if humans look at something lovely, a piece of art, it doesn't have to be the Mona Lisa, it can literally be...
I don't think that's lovely.
Well, no, she looks like the most disappointing
tourist but also destination.
She looks like she's got a right face on. She looks a bit passag to me.
So, we talk about using, being in the digital world too much, and therefore we need this balance of being outside. And, you know, what you're doing, of course, is promoting that.
Yeah.
But also there are benefits to using social media because you're getting the word out there.
Yes.
And even your photographs are giving people a hit of good vibes at the end of the day as well.
Well, yeah, so they have the capability of shifting your neurotransmitters, giving you a small... And people say, on the days when you're not posting sort of between 8 and, 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, people say, I missed your lovely nature photo.
So you know what you're doing is impacting others as well. Mm.
It is
really important.
Soothing them. And
your second book is called The Wild Remedy.
Right.
I've got it and read it and it's really brilliant.
Thank you.
It's really interesting. It does make you think about nature throughout the season, mm-hmm. so definitely recommend
it. Wasn't it in the top 20, not far behind the Obama book? Is that right? What did you say earlier?
Yes, only for a few days.
Modest.
Only for a matter how many days. If it was there, it was there.
Even for an hour.
For
it's
a few
worth
days,
that.
It was. Yeah, because it was the subject of Radio 4's Ramblings.
Oh, incredible.
Well, that's amazing. Thank you so much, Emma, for spending time with us.
You're welcome.
I feel quite energised, if you like.
Yeah.
To go.
Do you? And we're about to go on a bit of a woodland walk as well, aren't
we?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, so we're going to see what is out in our local area. We're going to have some fun.
Nice.
We're here with Emma Mitchell, who is also known as Silver Pebble on Instagram. She's become known for her beautiful flat lay pictures, but more importantly, for the mental health well-being that she talks about, and talking about her own experiences and how she's been helped by nature, not just getting out there, but also taking that nature back into her home, also noticing the changes with the season. So we're here in Wicken Woods in Suffolk, and she's taking us on a nature walk, and she's going to point out lots of the lovely flowers, the
birds.
No
pressure, Emma.
Yeah.
You better find something now.
We can't wait to get going.
It's started pouring with rain.
It has just started pouring with rain.
We're going to ignore that for a little bit.
No, it's pretty heavy.
It is pretty heavy, but this is nature, folks.
Okay.
This is
we're
going to
roll
goes.
With that, so.
We're going to go, yeah.
Okay, so over to you, Emma. What are we seeing here in Wicken Woods?
I am not familiar with this wood at all. This is, I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce it, whether it's Wicken or Wicken. Mm-hmm. But
we're going to go with Wicken.
Okay.
Even though we don't know.
That's good. And it's behind Wicken Vineyards. So it's not Wicken Fen. We're about 20, 25 miles from Wicken Fen.
This is W-Y-K-E-N.
That's right. So we're in a very beautiful part of Suffolk, fairly near Bury St Edmunds. Mm-hmm. And this wood is not familiar to me at all. But we've already come across bluebells, haven't we?
Yes, natives.
Native bluebells at their peak.
Beautiful, really, really bright blue, aren't they? Gorgeous colour.
So vivid.
Indigo, isn't
yeah, it,
it
is, yeah.
Colour.
I know, it does, I think it does something to our retinas. I think there's something
this
is stitchwort.
Stitchwort?
And it's Silene.
I'm not sure, I don't think so. I think Silene tends to be a campion. Okay. So stitchwort has got quite a few colloquial names. Mm-hmm. I think one of them is bachelor's buttons.
Bachelor's button.
Yeah, it's a sweet name, isn't it? But I think it's so pretty. Look at that.
It's gorgeous.
As well.
Gorgeous drift of little white flowers with 5 petals. Each petal is deeply divided, though. So it looks almost as though it has 10 petals, but very delicate. I haven't got much more to say. I'm sure that it's a food plant for various butterflies, but I have to confess I don't know which
ones. But what we do know is it looks really pretty.
Very lovely.
So we like that.
Oh, the other thing we've got down here, I think, is wood avens.
Yeah.
So I think that's wood avens rather than water avens, but GM. So this is a relative, isn't it? A wild relative of the GMs that we have that flowering at the moment. So
They are.
Very pretty. They tend to be sort of salmon peachy.
Like totally tangerine is very orangey, isn't it?
That's a really good one.
I've got a nice red one. I can't remember what it's called.
Isn't it Mrs. somebody? Mrs. Bradshaw.
Mrs. Bradshaw. Mrs. That's
Bradshaw.
The one.
That's the one, yeah. She's ace, isn't
People
she?
I don't realise that there's actually a wildflower version as well. Well, it's a very short plant. It would be easy to miss it as well, wouldn't
I
it?
I do love this one. I mean, the Wood Avens has a tiny little yellow flower and... In the first version of...
Is this the tiny little flower?
That's a celandine.
Oh, no, yeah, no. It's underneath, I see
that's
that.
That's a tiny
now,
celandine.
Yeah. Yeah.
No,
this
the flowers...
Layer
upon flowers,
layer
are,
flowers here.
Yeah. Yeah, the flowers are coming here, you can see. But they're very delicate, almost a bit like a strawberry flower, but okay. With yellow petals. But nice. In a way, I prefer the water avens, which is another relative. They've got beautiful sort of salmon pink flowers that are like a bell.
Lovely.
But they tend to like... Much more damp place. Yeah.
Hey!
Thanks!
Sticky Willy!
So
we
used to call this goose grass.
Yeah? Yes, and I just stuck it to your blouse.
And I've now got a bra made out of it. How lovely.
Emma has a Sticky Willy on her.
But there is
breast.
So much.
Thank you for that detail.
Right, we're editing that out.
No,
Emma.
We're not.
I don't think we should, actually.
But this plant, there's so much chat about this plant at the moment, isn't there? People are using it to make soups.
Yeah,
that's
really
right.
Rich in vitamins and minerals.
Very good for you.
It?
That is.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, now that... Is that bugle?
Yes, ajuga.
Ajuga, yeah.
Ajuga and...
Look behind.
I don't know if that's dog violet or sweet violet. And look, speedwell.
So much.
Oh, so many little baby
speedwell here.
This is in a tiny patch in the woodland. Within this one patch, there's all of those things.
Oh,
it's incredible what you can find, isn't it?
Look, Herb Robert as well.
Herb Robert.
Wild geranium.
Yeah.
Now look,
there's loads.
So much.
That's incredible.
Diversity just here in this tiny.
And this is just in kind of like meters.
This is a kind of sedge. I'm not sure what it's called, but it's really pretty. It's flowering just now.
And of course, while we're here looking at all of these beautiful wildflowers, we're in amongst the trees, so we're also forest bathing, aren't we?
Well, we are. I mean, it's not hugely warm today. I think the effects of forest bathing are more noticeable on warmer days. Just checking what that was. I think
Unless you're wearing an anorak.
I actually feel quite warm in my nice thick coat.
No, what I'm talking about is the plant oils, though, because when I'm walking over... various different kinds of plants now. So there's some buttercups there and various grasses, sedges and wood avens and things like that. And they're all releasing their own cocktail of plant oils when we sort of squash their leaves a little bit. They're not damaged necessarily, they just release them. And those plant oils, as you may know, are there to protect the plant and sort of defend them against their own viruses and bacteria.
Yeah.
And it's those plant oils that you wouldn't necessarily smell unless it was a plant like lavender that you were brushing past or treading on,
yeah.
Or something else.
Something
really
very fragrant.
Really scented. You know, like, there's a relative of Sticky Willy, actually, and it's called Sweet Woodruff.
Okay.
And that
I
would
make Sweet Woodruff.
Oh, that's great for sleeping
at night,
really
isn't
beautiful
it? Yeah.
And I think it used to be a strewing herb. Uh-huh. So, you know, when they had rush mats in the down on the floor, and they perhaps put it to cover up some nasty nymphs,
yeah.
Michael.
It's so it's really pretty as well. I love the whorls in the foliage.
Oh,
ignoring
so pretty. But they are, it's related, I think, to, yes, it's a Galium. So it's a type of, it's a relative of... Of Sticky Willy. But anyway, if we were walking over Woodruff, you'd smell it.
Mm.
And we don't necessarily smell what we're walking on at the moment, but we're still inhaling oils from these plants. And it's those oils that have an astonishing effect, various effects actually, on the human body very quickly as well. So we've been out here how long? About 10 minutes?
Yeah.
So we're getting into the zone of the time frame where we're going to start really gaining the benefits of being out among these trees and plants. So lots of the Japanese research that is underpinning their movement called forest bathing, which is extolling the benefits of being outside in a forest or a wood when you're both mentally or physically unwell either. You know, if you're just feeling really rotten in various ways, it's really recommended in Japan by the government to get outside into a place like this. And the reason that they, and it's government promoted, so it's a bit like in this country,
seeing an advert on the telly for eating your five a day or getting a little bit more exercise. It's that high profile. It's not seen as a little bit folksy, okay, like it might be here. It still is seen as a bit sort of, well, that's a bit old-fashioned. What are you?
That's a bit hippie.
That's it. Or are you a 19th century person? What are you on about?
Yeah.
Oh, hello.
Hello,
oh,
sorry.
Hello, meadow sweet.
Yeah.
Yes. So this is a very scented herb too, isn't it? A very scented plant.
Philopendula.
That's
lovely,
right.
Plant.
So its leaves, I think, are a bit medicinal. In their smell. Is that right? A bit like germaline. Oh, it is. It's like germaline.
It, that does. Yeah, you've got to really rub. You've
oh
got to
gosh,
break
yes,
the leaf.
Wow.
Germaline
yeah.
for the leaves, but
let the oil out, and you can smell it there.
That's really
germaline. Really reminds me of my childhood. It was the yeah. we always had that and witch hazel in the cupboard.
Did you
that's right.
And scars. I guess.
I was always falling over.
Being
yes.
so gung ho as you are.
my mum called germaline magic cream because it was yeah. it was also pink, so it was quite appealing.
That's right. Yeah.
And it smelled super weird, didn't it? But yeah. then if you put it on your knee, it was like okay, I'm, I'm good now. I'm fine now.
Mm. All yeah. is well
my
in the
grandma,
world.
I know this is a bit off subject. She used to have something called, what was it? It was like a skin. It was like this thing that you'd put over a cut and it was then a second skin.
Okay, that sounds just a yeah. little bit witchy and weird.
It did the trick.
I've never heard of that.
It was like a kind of liquid plastic.
I've seen that.
What was it called? Second skin.
For,
yeah.
And then you get it for blisters now.
Yeah, and it really helped.
Oh, that sounds
I
really
I still get that now.
But meadow sweet, when it flowers, it's got an amazing scent. And actually, it's quite a fashionable foraging ingredient yeah. now, isn't it? I think super chic chefs are using meadow sweet flowers in sorbets and ice creams because it's really a little baby sapling.
Oh, this is going to one day be a lovely magical tree that we can all hug.
Oh.
In fact, I'd like to find a tree to hug.
Ellen, did you tell them your story about hugging trees in Norwich?
yeah.
There's well, another magic plant there. But sorry, you go on. I want to hear about you hugging trees.
I love
trees.
Hugging trees.
Do you?
Yeah, so once I was on Mousehold Heath in Norwich. It's a lovely open area. But there's woodland areas and there's a big heath at the back and
yeah.
open green space. It's really lovely. Anyway, so I went there and I was hugging a tree. And somebody actually walked, well, they came up and I hadn't seen them.
Yeah.
And she said, she was walking her dog and she said to me, "Are you okay?"
Did she think you were being propped up?
I don't know
by
what she thought was happening.
Or perhaps you had a bit of a crisis.
I just said, "I'm fine, thank you. I'm hugging a tree." And then I realised that sounded even worse. I said, "You should try it." And she went,
and then just walked away.
And carried on walking, yeah.
Hey, there's another brilliant plant here. So this little delicate pink number is actually cuckoo flower.
Ah.
And it's also Cardamine pratensis, and it's also got really lovely colloquial names. Lady's smock, not bedstraw, because that's comes later in the year. Lady's smock. And what's great about this flower? Well, various things about it. I've got kind of nerdy knowledge about this kind
this
of thing.
This is it's fabulous.
First of all, it used to be sold, and I learnt this from one of John Lewis Temple's books, it used to be sold as a salad, a bitter salad. It's actually related to rocket.
Really?
So it's quite peppery and delicious. But more importantly, we wouldn't really necessarily gather it now unless you had it in your garden, because you could eat it then.
Okay.
But it's the food plant for the orange tip butterfly.
And we've just seen.
Just saw one where we parked our car, didn't
yeah.
we? So he's in a good place, or she.
Yeah.
I've got a little tiny wisp of cuckoo flower in my weeny pond. But I'm also growing, oh, hello, is that ground ivy?
Yeah.
That is so pretty.
Yeah, we're just spotting one
Sorry.
Thing after the other
I'm
after
just,
the other.
Uncovering them ready for her to talk about. She's like, oh, hello. The minute she sees them, she's into them.
A bit butterfly-minded. The orange tip will lay its eggs on that, but will also lay eggs on garlic mustard or jack by the hedge.
Okay.
I'm not sure of its scientific name. Do you know, Michael? You know the one I mean?
Garlic mustard. Oh,
little
yes,
white
yes,
flowers.
Yes.
Again, a brassica.
Yeah.
And I found, get this, an orange tip caterpillar who just hatched on my garlic mustard.
That's incredible.
In my garden about 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Might have had a bit of a moment.
And like, it makes you feel good.
So good. So
it makes you realise how small we are.
Well,
yeah. As well. Yeah,
but also what's brilliant is I had a couple of plants of it growing and I didn't know any better a year or two ago.
pulled them out because I thought, oh, it's sort of weird. I'm not, and now I realise it's a food plant. So I've actually got two patches that I encouraged and sort of sowed. And now the butterflies have come. Yeah. So I'm so excited.
They
come,
they find it, don't they?
Yeah, if you grow it.
Yeah.
They'll find it eventually.
Yeah, we just saw the little mow flower, the ground ivy, the glanchoma. You seen that one before, this?
I have. And do you know what? I think it's quite scented.
Yeah.
And here's another sprig of it. I think, I might be wrong, but I think they used to use it to flavour beer when they didn't have any hops. I'm just going to have a sniff of it. Hold on. Yeah.
Is that it?
The smell of that. Quite an interesting herbal smell.
Actually, that smells similar to sage, actually.
Yeah, have a sniff.
So, oh, my gosh.
Right, yes. I'm going to double check that fact. I don't think we can check it in the wood, but I think they used
to... We've got 3G.
Wow.
But Ellen, you might recognise that because the variegated version is actually a really popular basket plant that's often just sold as Nepeta.
Is it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that is basically variegated ground ivy.
Hold on, it's Nepeta?
Yeah.
Is catnip related to that?
It is in a roundabout way, but they tend to call the variegated one just Nepeta.
Okay.
Hanging baskets.
Okay.
But it is basically a variegated ground ivy, which is glauchoma.
Oh, that's it.
That is so ace.
You know your stuff, don't you? Look at that one.
This is a bit of a...
A thug.
Marmite plant, isn't it? What's
no,
that one?
Love it. I love it.
Nettles.
Nettle soup, nettle tea.
Yeah, and I've taken to growing it. Yeah. And if I see a little wisp of it, instead of going, damn you, and, you know, hacking at it,
yeah.
I now move a little sprigs of it to a part of my garden where...
Where you want it to be.
I want it to be because it's a food plant for about 4 different species of British butterflies. So I'm...
You're cultivating it for
I am.
Wildlife.
I am and now, yeah.
And also, you know, if you have it in abundance, because obviously we always want to leave some for wildlife, but nettle tea, nettle soup, it's so good for you.
It's really rich in iron, isn't it?
Yeah, rich in iron, lots of vitamins.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always, you know, we're out here now and we may walk along and think, oh, that's just all weed. But everything has its place, doesn't it? Everything
it does.
Has a benefit.
It does.
That's what it's all about. Everything works together to make the planet one.
Yeah,
you know?
this ecosystem, these are not individual plant specimens, are they? This is a kind of verge side or a sub hedgerow. Oh, here he goes. Oh. Right.
The orange tip.
Now let's see where she goes.
Is that the orange tip?
So that's the orange tip butterfly has literally just flown right by us, just as Emma said a moment ago.
Right, so
let's watch where
this butterfly will lay on cuckoo flower or Jack by the Hedge garlic mustard.
So it's off looking for something. But it's very beautiful. So the orange tip butterfly is a small white butterfly with tipped wings, which are orange, and they're very beautiful, aren't they?
It's so funny. It's like we're giving a commentary, like we're watching a
somebody who's
a
listening,
car race or something.
They may not have seen the orange tip butterfly, and I think it's really nice for people to kind of visualise where we are. So we're kind of in a woodland pathway.
Yeah.
And there it goes.
It came on cue. It's almost as though we'd sort of trained him up.
And there
give him a fiver. Please appear.
It was butterfly wacky races, I think. See? That wasn't a fake laugh, Ellen. Your laughs are always fake when I tell jokes.
What? Well, I'm saying nothing.
Thank you, Emma.
You paid her.
Are these sloes, these little baby plants here?
That's a good question.
Or some sort of...
I think you're right. Let's have a look.
Do you make anything with sloes?
Me? Yeah. I make sloe gin, but I also use sort of wild bullaces, which are little... But plums are a bit bigger than a sloe and also sweeter. Let's have a look. I'll be able to tell if this is blackthorn. Because it will have... Yes, see, look.
Yeah.
Some brutal thorns there.
Oh, yes, nasty.
I think that...
That's blackthorn,
I think it is.
Mm.
And it should have the remains of blossom, which I think it does. But these are quite young specimens.
Yeah, they're just little saplings, aren't they?
So isn't it amazing that we've literally just walked around here for 15, 16 minutes?
Sorry, Ellen.
No, good.
Gorgeous.
And we've seen so much in such a short time. It's quite incredible, really.
This is a beautiful wood. I think it's quite ancient. I mean, if you look at the size of the trees, I would say this is quite a well-established wood. And whether it's a, you know, a little patch of the ancient wildwood, I wouldn't like to say. But
no, but it's beautiful. So definitely get outside, go for a walk in the woodland and see what you can find.
Yeah,
it's really good.
We could do this forever, but I think we need to wrap up because we've got to get back.
Yeah.
We?
Thank you so much, Emma.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
It's lovely to be here with you.
Today's podcast partner is VeggiePod, the integrated all-in-one garden bed, suitable for anyone interested in growing your own. You'll be amazed at how quickly your vegetables grow in a VeggiePod, and as a special offer for our listeners, VeggiePod are offering PPP subscribers 10% off any sized VeggiePod when purchased with a stand or a trolley. Simply go to veggiepod.co.uk and enter PBP10 on checkout.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Plant Based Podcast.
Have a browse of the rest of the library or hop on over to the website, which is theplantbasedpodcast.net.
You'll also find our social media links. Please connect with us and let us know about any plant-based projects that you think we should be covering on the show.
And make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you'll be the first to hear the next episode. We're releasing once a fortnight. So until next time, enjoy the world of plants.